Today is Wednesday, June 8th, and this is episode number 363, I think, of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I am Brian Chaffin. What am I? Editor-in-chief? Co-publisher? I don't know. I got a few titles here at TMO.
And I'm John Keat, chief biter of my own tongue. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit the Mac Observer at macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment or question anything on this show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You did well, John.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
that's
you.
Good. You got through the script. And as you can tell, Jeff is not with us today. He is off at Mac Tech in Denver. And he'll be, I don't know, maybe we'll hear from him on that. I bet we hear from him on that on TDO, actually, because next Wednesday for this show, we'll be talking about WWDC.
It sounds like a fun thing he's doing where he's visiting. I'm kind of curious on.
Neil Tichton puts on a good show. He's done really, really well with this conference structure.
You've been to it? You've visited this show before?
I have not. Dave has many times, and Dave and I have talked about it extensively.
Okay.
So I am basing my information on Dave. Yeah. It's hearsay. And you had to bust me. Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. So let's see here. Thank you for stepping in and filling in for Jeff. Although technically I'm filling in for Jeff and then you're filling in for me because I'm filling in for Jeff. But, you know, whatever. Tomato, tomato.
Exactly.
So how about iTunes?
iTunes is a bag full of just all bad things. And the good news is there's a bunch of articles coming out that it's going to be fixed. They're going to get it right now.
It's going to be changed.
Baby, I'm going to stop beating you in the future. I'm going to love you like no one's loved you before. That's what Apple's telling us. We've been abusive, neglectful, and horrible, but it's all going to change. They're turning over a new leaf. I can tell it now.
Yeah, you don't believe it, do you?
No, so it can't be much more than lipstick on a pig, because the last change that they made was lipstick on a pig with bringing back the sidebar, which is, I guess, an improvement, but it's with a very low hurdle of hardness in iTunes and improving it and just bringing back what used to be there. The changes they're talking about is going to be a major overhaul at WWDC, but they're still talking about keeping a lot of these things together all within the iTunes app, like keeping Apple Music within the app. And this thing needs to be broken up onto so many more pieces than it currently is. It's, you know, Apple's so hypocritical on a bunch of things, with Tim Cook's famous example of we don't want to combine refrigerator with a toaster when looking at Microsoft stuff. But yeah, having a music player that also is responsible for syncing your photos, that's also responsible for device management, that's not a combination toaster refrigerator at all. It's completely different when they do it, Brian. I hope you know that.
Okay, it's like I agree with you in spirit, but I mean, you are making an apples and oranges comparison. Because Tim Cook has said that, and Steve Jobs said it before him about – actually, did Steve ever talk about the toaster fridge? I want to say that Steve also mentioned the toaster fridge, didn't he?
I don't – who knows, maybe. I could see that Tim Cook is so unoriginal that he would steal a line like that from someone that was more original. So I could see the reasoning behind that statement there, Brian. Thanks for admitting that.
Oh,
I appreciate it.
Man.
Moving on.
Yeah, that's – I cannot express how much I disagree with that.
He's really, really excited about their product.
Whoever talked about it was talking about hardware and iTunes, as flawed as it is a software product. It's not a hardware product. It's not a direct comparison, even though I agree with you in spirit. It's like, I mean, I'm mostly pedantic. This is known. this is known.
I see you have your hair splitter out. That's great. I'm not sure it's going to help iTunes any in that it's still just overburdened. And, you know, as much as I like to just dump on iTunes because it so deserves to be dumped on the other hand, it is something that had a lot of feature creep during a huge build out where Apple had a lot more important things to concentrate on. But at this point, it's highly neglected. And to me, it's pretty clear they need to break this up. I wrote a an article about it. You know,
you
how
did?
They
excellent.
Yeah, how they actually break it up is not as important as that they do break it up. And one of the things that would be great in helping things is, one, stop making me sync my photos through iTunes. That is just brain damagingly dopey to start with.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. I will counter that with, it actually makes a lot of sense to have all syncing done through one app.
So the name of that app should be iTunes, is that right?
No, that's not what I'm saying. What you just said was that it's brain dead to have your photos synced through iTunes.
Correct. Because right? One is called iTunes and the other one is called Photos.
Well, because iTunes came first. I mean, iTunes pedantic, evolved without the name evolving.
You know, for someone that's pedantic, you're really not kind of pulling your weight here.
Oh my, this is the first I'm being accused of not being pedantic enough. I love
That's it. Right. One is called iTunes and one is called Photos.
Well, no, but so should you sync music through Photos?
So, you know, it's funny. Although we disagree on kind of our pedanticness here, I think we actually agree in spirit that, yeah, I agree that there should be something responsible for sync. And in the article I wrote a while back, I kind of said, look, we need something that does syncing and kind of IT and data management. And in some sense, Apple has kind of given us a little preview of that. If you look at the airport utility, if you have more than one airport kind of hooked together, one, it lets those devices get bridged automatically by just connecting some lines there and setting things up. But we have a lot more devices, and this whole notion that, you know, we might have automated homes and the Internet of Things, there's only going to be more devices to manage. And if you, as so many of my friends who have families, you know, they have kids and their wives and their moms and dads, that they do a lot of management of devices, every time a system update comes up, they want to kill themselves. Because getting all the devices just in sync on the operating systems that come out, getting their parents to update those things is so difficult to keep in sync. And there's no tool kind of for the average person's home. There's some enterprise tools that let a whole company, you know, deploy updates and whatnot.
We actually have a sponsor, a frequent sponsor.
Yeah. Right,
right. Not today. Not a sponsor of the show. Uh-huh. Right? And as a matter of fact, they've never sponsored the Apple Context Machine, but they've often sponsored.
They should feel foolish right about now for not that.
TDO. They've been a frequent sponsor of TDO, and I think they've been a frequent sponsor of the Mac Geek Gab as well. But for like $2 a month, you can manage each of your parents' iPhones.
And I think I've seen that product, and I think it's pretty spiffy. And so something like that, but even more so. Further than just the phones and the Macs, it could go on to the airport routers. It could go on to kind of the thermostats and sensors. There's a lot of stuff that people could manage, and syncing data. This is a constant problem. People have problems syncing their photo libraries because their kids took a bunch of photos on their Macs and they have it, and the iPhoto library doesn't like to merge things or do things like consolidate this information and distribute that information. Moving these vast, huge, big piles of data in between all these machines and making them available to all these different machines, that kind of management is something that people struggle with on their own. There's nothing that to help them, and Apple needs that. And that's something that can be taken as kind of the guts, the sync engine of iTunes, roll it out into its own kind of broader device management engine, and then it would make sense for that to be responsible for syncing your photos from one place to the other, your music from one place to the other, all those types of data. It's like, hey, I want to sync. I want to give my wife my contacts and share some of those and my calendar and some of those, but not all of those contacts should go to my kids or whatnot. All this, there's so many different piles of data that people struggle with in just the average household. To have some kind of big sync engine program that does that, I think would be one of the good directions for splitting up iTunes.
So and we don't want the same software that's managing our media libraries managing our devices. I think that's actually at the heart of it. So, like, I think that it's pretty clear at this point that folks want a light music player, be it an Apple Music player, which we'll be getting to, or an iTunes music player that's playing the files that are on your device or accessing the files that you have stored in iCloud, if that's your thing. And that we don't want that same software. We don't need that same software also managing our devices. I think that's at the heart of what you're saying.
Agreed. But I think the splits, personally, I think it should be split and fractured even more. For example, even within, there's two other fractures I'd love on music. They're the folks that love and curate their own music. You know, Apple went so over the top in swallowing the baloney that Beats sold to them about this hand curation of playlists and whatnot. And they somehow seem to have forgotten that all the music lovers that have their own music libraries have for a long time curated their own music library, and they like it, and some of it is lossless, and they have all their tags. And iTunes has been obliterating some of that content because it's confused on what music is your own, what music is part of Apple Music, what music is part of the Music Match or Apple Match services that they offer. And so I'd like to see those removed. Meaning, if you're streaming music, let's have a streaming music app. Don't potentially destroy my curated purchased music, which gets us, by the way, into another topic that there's rumors out that iTunes...
Don't take us down that rabbit hole yet. We will dedicate time for that one.
All right, the downloads may be going away. But anyway, I didn't say that. So, but the point being is that I have my own, people have their own curated music, and let them have a really good music manager for that. And it makes sense to have a separate app for Apple Music, the streaming service, because the point of that is different. One is curating my own music and making sure I can be as OCD as I want to be with that. And the other is about discovery. And the interfaces for that, they need to become their own things. Kind of that famous discussion that Steve Jobs had with Johnny Ive about the Sunflower iMac, right? Let each part do its own thing, be its own thing. And discovery and streaming are just different from curation of your own purchased and owned music. And let those things flower so they could do a better job of it. I have several friends that are experts, and myself included, on kind of having an iPhone from forever. They're technical people, they're engineers. When Apple Music first came out, it put a layer on your iPhone where people couldn't even find, where's the controller just to play my own music that I have on this phone, to do the next track, reverse track, play, pause, because it was in a little slit just hidden by the new Apple Music portion of it that nobody necessarily asked for. And it's because, not because they're just such horribly incapable UI designers, which when you look at a mess UI like that, it's difficult not to conclude that, but because even on the iPhone, the user interface is so overburdened with so many tasks that it's hard to fit them all and have it be easy and intuitive and coherent and simple. So you just need to rip that out. If you want to listen to your stream music, launch an app. And that's why some people like Spotify. It's got its own world that way.
Yeah, I gotta interrupt you there too, because there are people who want to mingle their streaming with their own stuff. For instance, say you're a Beatles fan, and you've got 7 Beatles albums. You don't have the other, how many did they release? 13? 11 or 13? Something like that, right? And you want to be able to have you now have a subscription to Apple Music, and you want to be able to listen to the entire Beatles catalog, including what you own and what is on Apple Music available for streaming. Actually, are the Beatles even on
Apple They're Music? On.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, the full thing's on.
I was about to get myself in trouble there. And for those people, they're not going to want those split.
So, one, there's a few technical solutions to that that could be done to get rid of it. So, still make them separate apps. One, almost all their music's going to be there. But you're right. There's a bunch of bootleg and special tracks bands that have lots of live performances, like the Grateful Dead, right, where there's custom tracks that people have ripped, and they still want that to be part of the mix. nothing is stopping Apple from doing something like they did with their Apple Match service. Is that what it's called? Is it called Apple Match? Or I keep wanting to say Music Match.
Well, it used to be iTunes Match.
iTunes Match, right. Thank you. iTunes Match, where you copy all the Delta tracks, meaning the ones that aren't available on Apple Music, up in the sky, and you just keep that there, and it's got nothing to do with their curated library. You made that copy, and every time there's a new track that's custom to it, it gets sent up there, and it doesn't affect the original. That's the worst part about all this mixing, is the app, iTunes, that's responsible for curation and management, that can destructively edit your own music, is also the one that's responsible for dealing with this music service. And when the two mix, sometimes the results, as been reported in the press, have been disastrous, where there's tracks deleted, where there's your own tracks are replaced with DRM tracks from digital rights management and copy protected tracks from Apple Music, and it's a mess.
Yeah, I actually want Apple, by the way, I got another interruption. I want Apple to leave my tracks on my device alone if they're there. And I want Apple to match them only on devices where they are not there. That, to me, is the best of all worlds. And that way I can manage my own. I can curate my own library and access that library on any device that I'm at without Apple mucking about with it, without Apple changing my sample rates or anything else.
And so I agree with you, and I think the easiest way to do that is if iTunes becomes a curation app that is incapable of dealing with all those outside services, those outside services can then non-destructively read the corpus of iTunes, copy it up to the cloud, do whatever, and make it available. But they will never have methods and functions that modify and operate and read, write, or have the ability to mess up the tracks in your iTunes library. Much like currently your Photos library, the only place you can really edit that stuff easily is through the Photos app. And a lot of other apps let you call up that library, copy out things from it, but they don't let you make edits to it.
Right.
So it'd be a system somewhat more like that.
Yeah. Anyway. We were joking that it's so much less fun when we agree.
Yeah, it is really boring when we agree.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I love the idea of having central repositories that are managed by one app and accessed by another.
And I also, you probably not as on board with the let each app do its own thing, but for another example of that is there is a podcast app on your iPad and on your iPhone for a reason. They work better than they're just totally lost inside of iTunes. It's another overburdened feature that is almost never used within iTunes because it's a UI disaster. And it's so much more pleasant and so much more focused on task on the iPhone and iPad. And some people are probably actively mocking me for a slew of very valid reasons, but because the podcast app used to be so awful. I remember the first few times I looked at it, and even when it had major revamps like the version 2 or 3, it was a total disaster. I mean, there are many derogatory terms that we're not allowed to use on this show, which is why I'm the chief biter of my own tongue on this show, that describes just how bad that podcast app was. The latest version is still not perfect, but so much better and so much more up to the task of dealing with podcasts and getting new episodes and whatnot. And it just works way better. So why not have that on the Mac as well and get rid of that feature? And again, then the app can do more of its own thing. It can be free because it's not overburdened by 8,000 other features like syncing photos. To do its own thing about podcasts.
And it's interesting that Apple has separated all of these functions on iOS into dedicated apps with narrow feature sets and narrow purposes, right? And Apple has broken off the Mac App Store and iBooks on the Mac.
Right.
But otherwise has not decided to break this stuff up. And so, Kelly, this morning, did you listen to this morning's Daily Observations?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't catch it.
Are you a communist?
I had to work.
Oh, that's right. You do. Okay. All right. Fine. Not a communist. Kelly was saying that she wanted the breakup to become this WWDC. That I said then, and I'll tell you now, if in case you're asserting the same thing, that is not happening next week.
Dude, we're so boring because I was saying the same thing. As much as I would love, I agree with Kelly, and to give Kelly, I believe, credit, I think about a year or two before my Johnny Come Lately article about we should split up iTunes, she penned an article as well. I wasn't aware of it until after I wrote my article. And if I was, I wouldn't have bothered with my article. But I guess
y'all approach the same thing for those keeping score at home. Y'all approach the same thing from different enough perspectives that I knew about both of them, and I was keen on it.
Yeah, and full credit to her for being much more insightful, much more early. But let me put it this way. Little birdies that have a reason to know, and with much better fidelity than I would, have told me there's basically, once they embarked on the disastrous implementation of Apple Music, which I can't say with enough further how much I think sucks, there was basically one dude left working iTunes, the app. One dude. So, ain't happening. Now that they've gotten enough shaming for the past month on what a disaster iTunes is.
Longer than that, but go ahead.
But it's gotten, you're right, it's been roaring for quite a while. And to be fair to our Windows brothers and sisters out there, we're probably the canary in the coal mine saying how bad it was earlier on and how heavy a resource hog and mess it was over on Windows. But it's gotten up to a very high pitch in the last month or so. With a lot more activity and in the press, I think, deservedly slamming it. I think it's gotten to a high enough roar where it's one of those things where now Apple is embarrassed enough that they're going to do something on it. We'll probably hear some of the direction that they want to go into at the WWDC, but I don't think we're going to see what really needs to be done, which is this thing needs this many tentacled monster needs to be sliced down into better managing chunks. And what was interesting about her article, when I went back and read it too, we also came to the same conclusion that one of the, however you split it up, there are many reasonable ways to split it up, but one of the things that's really needed is kind of I almost don't want to denigrate it in saying, you know, an updated version of iSync, because that was not exactly a beloved technology early on in the iPod's lifetime, but some seriously better device management, an IT tool for the home, an IT tool for the poor person that ends up being the designated IT, grunt in every home.
Apple should buy Jamf software.
That would be a great start,
because their platform. Jeff uses this to manage his parents' iPhones. So his example is, I didn't do anything, but my email settings are gone. Right? I'm sure you didn't do anything, sir. Right. And he's able to just push them back out. Right? Easy peasy. And it's
although I'm starting to worry that Apple is becoming the new Yahoo and AOL. It's a company that buys great technologies and where all good technologies go to die. And the current, high feature version of that is Siri. They buy this groundbreaking tech. They buy the team that does this and do nothing with this unbelievable lead they have in technology. And those same people are so disenfranchised, at least I'm projecting this. This is all supposition on my part, that they leave, go out and create a new, better version of what Apple should have been doing all along. Just think how much work those people had to do to create Viv. They had to leave and then start all over again and build a whole new system, and yet still leapfrog Apple, who's picking its nose all this time, doing nothing. Embarrassing. I'm sure you completely agree with that position. I can tell by that reaction.
I actually mostly do.
That's no fun.
I know. I am. See, I'm constantly at war, John. I have orders of magnitude more faith, maybe even infinitely more faith than you, in the idea that Apple is doing things that we don't know about. including things with Siri, including things with AI. I believe that Apple has a grand plan for Siri, and that Apple is, you know, is wanting to leapfrog search. That Apple has a lot of plans for Siri and for AI in general, and that Apple has a path for getting us there. And at the same time, I suppose I worry about Apple's ability to execute. You know, when you read things like, and I think we might have even, well, I know that you and I have briefly mentioned this. I can't remember if it was on a podcast or if it was on a private conversation. But there was an article that I read talking about how Apple's penchant for secrecy was causing problems in its efforts to do AI. Because the AI community tends to be very open, lots of white papers, lots of open sourcing, that sort of thing. They tend to work with each other, tend to talk to each other, they go to conferences, they gab, blah, 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 blah. And that, of course, Apple's entire modus operandi is completely antithetical to that. And that, according to that article, this is causing Apple problems. I don't know whether or not that's true, but I worry that it is. And if it is true, how is Apple actually going to beat the other companies that are also pouring large amounts of resources into this? I mean, like, you know, that Amazon, a company that I both love and hate, can leapfrog Apple with a product like Alexa is, like, annoying as can be to me. And actually, Google Home isn't getting too many rave reviews. That Microsoft's Cortana can get more positive buzz about it than Siri, that drives me nuts. And so, I'm constantly war with myself. I know that Apple is doing stuff that we don't know about. And I know, I believe very strongly that Tim Cook has a vision. It may not be the vision that you want, particular John. And it may not even be a vision that that is easy to see from the outside. But I know that Tim Cook has one and that he's pursuing it. And then I worry that Apple can actually do so. Like your article about Apple's failure to scale. It's so on point. It was so on point. So, yeah, constantly at war with myself.
So beyond you being completely wrong about Tim Cook having any vision other than bland beige walls, the part there that I kind of disagree with is this notion of it's kind of like, you know, Jesus has a plan for all of us. I think that Apple is more like a savant toddler with ADD. You know, right now the shiniest object is some kind of Apple Watch wrist strap that they're totally into. It's going to have a cool new color and material. That toddler is fixated on that. And cannot imagine anything else being more important right now. And it's a brilliant toddler. They will put on some kind of, you know, unicorn tears material made for that, for the next wrist strap watch. But in the meantime, they've kind of lost track of the plot, and everything else falls on the wayside. The good news is they do have laser focus, and when it's pointed to it, good things will happen. The bad news is, if you're not under that pinpoint of focus, everything else goes to pot. And if it's true that there's one dude managing all of iTunes, that's pretty decent evidence of that being a problem.
Yeah, you're both wrong and right. You're mostly right, but
just out of spite, I'm wrong. I understand.
No, it's not that. Here's the deal: is that I also think that so like. If you, like at a granular level, I think that you're spot on almost everything you just said, but at the same time, I think that Apple is in the midst of this massive transformation that we are only barely getting a glimpse of, and that a lot of the things that you and I complain about, a lot of things that a lot of Apple fans and users and customers complain about, are essentially surface issues that don't even come close to revealing what's really happening at Apple right now, and that in many ways they're growing pains.
So, one, I love your optimistic outlook because it's sort of
antithetical to yours
with my totally caustic, cynical miserableness. Right. So thank goodness for that. But because that is my nature, and the scorpion will bite I forget the animal that was taking it across the river and kill themselves both, or the snake, was it, right? Anyway, I digress. mixing a lot of bad metaphors.
Is that a Russian metaphor?
Yeah, it's something, a joke about like a snake asking like a little badger to give it a ride over this lake because it can't make it on its own, or maybe it was a scorpion, and the badger says, why would I do that, you're going to kill me, and the scorpion says, no, because if I kill you I'm going to drown, so I have a reason not to kill you. And so the badger says, all right, get on my back, and they start going, and halfway through the scorpion of course bites them, and the badger's like, dude, why are you doing that, we're both going to die now, and the scorpion says, I couldn't help it, it's just my nature. I'm not sure why that would ever be funny. It was more metaphorical, but
it's in my nature to be mostly pedantic, and the scorpion would have stung, not bite. But go ahead.
Thanks.
Mostly pedantic.
You get, I clearly didn't. I barely remember the anecdote, but anyway. But now I lost track of what the heck I was talking about.
Something about Apple's nature. About the transformation. I was talking about the large transformation and that we're not seeing what's really happening at Apple.
Oh, right. So this being my cynical nature, you know, people were making similarly hopeful comments like that in 1995. The Copeland was just around the corner. Who are we, mere mortals, to question the genius ongoings in the amazing, you know, think tank that is Apple? In the meantime, yeah, they were like days from freaking bankruptcy, and you know, it was buying an operating system that made completely elsewhere with the horrendous operating system underpinnings from the 70s, right?
But so, to be fair, you should see the expression that John Keat just gave me. You should just see that expression of utter dismiss. That was like the most epic eye roll of all time. To be fair, Copeland was an amazing piece of software. It was the culture at Apple that was the problem, not the technology itself.
Way to deflect on the point.
All right. Yeah, fair enough.
So, anyway, who knows? And you know what? To be honest, I am as caustic and cynical and annoying as I am. I am a big Apple fan, and I do hope you're right that this is part of they're moving mountains, and unfortunately some things didn't get as much attention paid to them as they as even Apple would like, and great things are just around the corner, and you know, from your lips to Tim Cook's ears, and hope that that's actually what comes about. We'll see, but I agree with you, I'm not holding my breath that they'll actually have any meaningful updates to iTunes other than lipstick on a pig come WWDC. Listen, and maybe a year and a half from now we'll finally see them doing the right things about it, which in my opinion is splitting it up and making it a little bit more like on iOS and a little bit more focused on each of the tasks.
I'm with you on that, and I do want to see that happen, but I will take as an intermediary step what you call lipstick on a pig, an improved interface, an improved more over what we just saw with this latest release that brought back the sidebar finally. But then I would also like to see a huge improvement in the Apple Music interface, because Apple Music is the future of Apple and music, whether or not one likes that. And with that in mind, we do hear another rumor. This has actually been going around. Digital Music News has been reporting for the last couple of months, but inside sources that say that that music downloads are going to go away from the iTunes Store. And Apple denied it, and then a record label CEO, an executive actually, I assume that she was the CEO, wrote, actually, and we're only assuming it was a she because it was anonymous, because the photograph accompanying it was the back of a woman. There was nothing that actually said that's necessarily her, so that could be misdirection too. Anyway, whoever wrote that article said, I'm a music executive and downloads are going away, and this is the way the entire music industry wants it. It's not just Apple, so get used to it. And then last night or this morning, another piece from Digital Music said that supposed insider sources insist that music downloads are going away perhaps as soon as 2 or 3 years from now.
Yeah, what a disaster, if true. It's one of these cases that I kind of wonder, why do I care about the future of anything? In that, let the new generation make its own world and its own image however it likes, because I won't be around, so who cares? If they want to never own music and constantly pay to access it, this has been the record industry's dream, to just make you pay all the time. Every listen is its own new special snowflake that you should be willing to give them lots of money for, because all those guys produce so much value. And by the way, it is tiring constantly stealing so much of the value from the artists. I mean, at a certain point, it's just so much money that you have to steal from them. And like, those poor fellows need a break. They need to go on vacation. It's just tiring. But, you know, for those that love to just throw money at stuff and never own it, no news for them. For those that like to own their content and curate it and own it, it's a problem. And what's interesting about the story is, normally I'd go into my negative Apple mode, which is, how lazy can you guys be? You can't even just keep selling the music and taking on money from that. But I wonder if it's a bigger play by the music industry, since that's where kind of the leak and confirmation is going, that they're pushing this agenda, and there isn't a strong Steve Jobs to smack them upside their head and say, this isn't happening, and I'm going to put you over a wheelbarrow. Because the easy solution then becomes, well, if Apple does away with it, I'll just go to Amazon and buy it. But the you wonder, why would that exist, right? Meaning, why would Apple give up on it and others keep doing it? It sounds like it's more of the licensing-backed issue that would make this go away than anything else.
I you're entirely wrong.
Okay.
I don't think that Apple is driving this. And I don't even think that the music labels are driving it. I think that consumers are driving it. And I think that the reality is that download sales are plummeting. And that arguing that Apple should keep download sales, even if and when it gets to the point where no one's doing it, doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, when no one's doing it, obviously I agree with you. But these numbers, the problem is people have such a problem with scale. Like, yeah, relative to Apple's bajillions of dollars of margin per iPhone, selling a 99-cent track becomes meaningless, but you're still talking about a lot of volume. And, what did people think? Oh, we're going to start having services where you can rent, but that means you should never buy. It'd be kind of like saying, well, in this country, since most people can't afford to buy and they just rent stuff, we should never sell anything. No, so property shouldn't be attainable.
As monolithic as Apple is, Apple is not a country. There will be people that are selling music, and there will be CDs that are sold. There's still vinyl available today, for goodness sake.
Yeah, I mean, here's the laughable thing is Steve Jobs was so right in this prospect with regard to music, where, and I can't say just how much actually, I shouldn't say. He was right in what makes iTunes better than stealing. Stealing is free. The price is clearly better. But people ultimately are selfish and love themselves and are lazy. And if you make it easier for me to get this at a cost that isn't too burdensome for me to earn and pay for, it's the lazy factor. I just click this and it appears and it's synced all automatically. What will happen is if it becomes unavailable, and there currently are people that on BitTorrent and whatnot, they have these awesome curated albums, like full rips of lossless content, full lyrics that we still don't have when we buy a track.
That's supposedly going to be introduced at WWDC, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll have to pay a penny every time you want to look at it, because you won't own those lyrics. You'll have to pay to peek at it every once in a while, or some other dopey idea. But anyway, of course, I'm being facetious and cynical. as if that had to be stated.
Oh, hey, it must be Wednesday.
Yeah. So, but And it's all available. I mean, and you can download it by the album, you can download it by the track, and you can download it by the artist's, like, life's collection on these things. And what will happen is it will push people back to pirating, because they just want an honest way to get and own and have this thing.
Oh, I think you're wrong, John. I think that for kids in particular, but kids, millennials on down, when you haven't spent decades investing in your music collection, you don't really care about it. And I think that that's a rational position. It's not my position, but I think it's a rational outlook on the world to say that you can get all of the music for $10 a month when you haven't already invested thousands and hundreds, if not thousands, of hours curating and listening and knowing and caring about each individual track that you have. When you haven't done that, I think the idea of paying $10 a month is to have everything is entirely rational, especially when you know how Dave Hamilton has been arguing that the music industry actually wants to get it down to the $3 to $5 a month range. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. I'm not familiar with this.
He's been arguing that the music industry understands that that's actually the price point that everyone will pay. And if we actually get to that point, and we kind of are at that point when you look at some of the family plans and some of the student plans that are available even through Apple Music, when that point is reached, it's even more rational. And those of us who grew up owning our own stuff, it's two separate ways to look at things, and I don't think either one of them is inherently superior.
There is. In this case, there is a right or wrong. So this is the kind of view where you have the totally inexperienced and moronic leading the industry, think as a Pied Piper right off of a pier. And this is a view that can only be contemplated by those with absolutely no concept of not having. Only spoiled, entitled children that get an allowance that allows them to have everything all the time.
Yeah.
Can appreciate this view. And what happens is, sooner or later, you're forced to do without. It's the same kind of thing, everything was great with the Zune until the service was turned off, and now all the DRM that you paid for is dead and useless to you. And as soon as your track that you got off of a bootleg concert or whatever at the Grateful Dead concert that is unavailable, then you're outraged. It's like most of humanity, horrid. And your money, time, and energy, Brian, are meaningless. Who cares? You should pay more. And when you waste your time and stuff, that's great for my benefit. But when it's my time, money, or energy, man, it's a completely different story. So when that demographic gets to the point where it affects them, and DRM, non-owning stuff, will eventually affect them, people think it'll never happen to me, and then their Zune servers die. And we've seen multiple services like that go down, and there are huge gaps in these libraries for real, genuine lovers of music, not just I'm listening to the top 40, which is awesome. There's nothing wrong with that. But these are idiot children whose world experience is dealing with the top 40 versus people that have lived a life that needs a little bit more roundedness. And that becomes something that is sorely missing. You can't argue it both ways, Brian, because just minutes ago you were saying, "Hey, I got Apple Music, and I need all those other personal tracks to fill in the gaps that they don't have." And now come back and hypocritically go around the other way. So when were you wrong, Brian? Was it then or now?
Listen, John, do you have any kind of position on the valid proximity of today's youth vis-a-vis your artificial fauna and flora habitat?
I don't know what you mean by that.
I'm saying that you are just like the old man screaming at the kids, get off his lawn.
Oh, yeah. So true, and I am an old man telling people to get off my lawn, I suppose. But it's – what's that line? But I think it's T.S. Lewis. The problem with cliches are that they sound like barren platitudes to those without the requisite experience. And because of such, there's no true learning and no teaching.
I agree with that. But whether or not Apple does away with downloads has nothing to do with whether or not downloads or CD purchases remain somewhere. And it is, I mean, like just today, for instance, I don't buy music from iTunes. I think I've bought fewer than 15 tracks from iTunes. And it's because I want lossless rips. I want lossless copies. So if I buy a download, it tends to be from someplace like Bandcamp or directly from the artist. Or I go and buy a CD and I rip it because I want it lossless. And Apple won't give me lossless. And because they won't give me lossless, I'm not going to give them any money. These alternate services do exist. CDs are still for sale. Vinyl is still for sale. Downloads can go away from iTunes without music ownership going away. Those who the niche, the increasingly smaller percentage of the population that wants and or needs to own its own music will be able to do so.
So this is weird. So then this is an interesting concept that I didn't think of. So it's really insightful. Meaning, so I'm still buying a track. It's just I won't ever have it. Well, clearly, that can't be the case. So meaning I buy a track, but all that ever happens is my device streams it. So when I go into a tunnel somewhere or something like that, I can't actually listen. Or does that mean I'm
not sure what you're asking?
You're saying the notion of purchasing music won't go away, but yet downloads may go away. So I'm not sure how
downloads might go away from iTunes, but they won't necessarily go away from existence. They won't cease to exist.
From existence, I see. Well, yeah, in that case, the solution becomes easy. I'm just going to go to Amazon or whoever else is still doing it. My worry is that this is being driven by the music industry to push everyone to always give them $3 a month or whatever it is and prevent you from owning it. If that's where it's coming from, then that becomes my worry. If you're right, if there are alternative services and Apple wants to get out of it, foolish in my opinion, but whatever. It's not their first foolish idea.
Yeah.
By the way, if you want high quality tracks, there's a site called HD Tracks, and they come in lossless.
Yes, I'm familiar with HD Tracks. Yeah, I like them too. I think I bought more from Bandcamp for what that's worth. Same thing.
Okay.
It's actually discovery is hard on Bandcamp, and even finding artists can be hard on Bandcamp, but that's another issue.
Have we beaten that horse enough?
Well, just I'm gonna echo something I mentioned earlier. Music downloads from iTunes will go away. It's only a matter of time, and that time is going to be decided essentially by the marketplace itself. Apple is going to recognize it before probably the rest of the world will, but just like Apple pulled the plug on, you know, ADB and CDs and DVDs and a lot of other things, floppy drives, right? Just like Apple pulled the plugs on those things, Apple's going to pull the plug on iTunes downloads, and the world will keep on going, and we'll
so you guys have been in San Francisco too long, because I know you guys are totally ready not to own any property. But the concept of ownership is pretty old, pretty damn old. This club, mine.
Well, then why are music downloads decreasing and streaming increasing?
Because it's for most people, it's totally great. It's kind of like saying, well, why do people pay for cable TV where they don't own anything, and not as many people buying DVDs and Blu-rays? Because look, most of the time, I just want to passively enjoy this for the time being.
Yeah, most people don't care about this stuff.
And most people don't care about this stuff. But there are some things that every once in a while I care about that I want to have that.
But you and I are educated. Listen, it's funny. It's funny, by the way, because you and I are actually on the same side of ownership. I own my music. I want to own my music. I do have an Apple Music subscription that I don't utilize, that I don't take advantage of enough.
You're just too nice to call other people as stupid as they deserve to be called stupid. And that was so poorly put.
Ladies and gentlemen,
that statement alone is mind-numbing.
May I introduce to you John Keat? No, but my point is that you and I are in the same case on this, but I think that you and I are also on the same side on this, but you and I are largely edge cases on this particular issue, certainly compared to certainly compared to young people. I think we're edge cases even for older users.
you may be right. Like I said, in some case, I just, after a while, like throw my hands up. I'm like, whatever, let people make the future they want. Yeah. None of my business.
As long as they stay off your lawn.
I got no reason. My lawn won't be my lawn. In some case, you're right. The whole notion of like, yeah, I'm here for a limited amount of time. The property will go elsewhere. So whatever.
All right, let's jump over to something that you pointed out to me today that I hadn't actually seen yet, Statistic Brain.
So, site is so cool. Yeah, they have all kinds of interesting statistics about lots of things and lots of companies, but in some of the statistics about just what Apple's been doing, you know, one wonders how accurate the site is. But interesting things right off the top of the page, like there was 355 million iPods sold total. Only 575 million iPhones, 229 million iPads. Pretty good on the iPads. Everyone bemoans it, but that's a lot.
Is this through 2014? I noticed that some of these statistics are through 2015. Some of them are through 2014.
It's not clear, right? So
because I think doesn't Apple claim a billion devices?
iOS devices? Add it all together. So if you take, don't forget, a lot of the iPods are iPod touches. So those are iOS devices too. So somewhere between the three, you probably get to a billion. But it's not totally clear as this as of 2014, 15, 16. I imagine it's a witch's brew of all. But nonetheless, still interesting stats. The one that really jumped out at me as interesting was that there were more apps sold on iTunes than music sold on iTunes, despite music having been out for a lot longer. I'm trying to find those numbers. Here it is. So did you look at these? Because I wanted you to guess how many songs do you think were downloaded? Or did you see?
I did not see. I would guess. Wow.
They stopped reporting at it after a couple of billion, right?
That's what I thought. Yeah, but I would guess 10 billion songs have been downloaded.
So not a bad guess. 17.5 billion. And again, I don't know if that's as of 2014, 15, or 16.
Gotcha.
So I've already given you a hint that it's more. So how many total iPhone app downloads do you think there were?
Based only on knowing that it's 17 billion and that it's more, 20 billion?
So it's more and by a lot. 37.25 billion app downloads. So it eclipses it.
It's hard to imagine people having more apps on their devices than songs. Isn't it? Isn't that just difficult to comprehend?
Of course, that's like downloads and re-downloads and downloads of the, you know, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4. But still,
Apple's never been clear about whether or not its download numbers are first time or updates.
And who knows what the provenance of their metric is right here. But still, it's a pretty interesting stat, in even if it's roughly accurate, that it's that much more. And when you think about it, you know, the music industry, how many years has iTunes Store been out for music? It's years and years. And it almost doesn't matter when the Mac version came out. When Windows hit, right. Is when the real numbers start counting. 17.5 billion over, let's just say, call it like 8 years, 10 years, something like that, is very little money for an industry. That's like a billion a year, or I don't know. It's not a lot of money that they're making on revenues on this. It's really kind of depressing. Yet those executives still make lots of money for their all successful management of the music industry.
Yeah, it's true. Supposedly, by the way, they're saying that Apple's bought Spotify.
Yeah, and you know,
I'm not buying that.
You may be right. There's Googled around a few articles on it, and it's not someone bought Spotify for $14 billion, but it's not clear. Is it a consortium or who or Apple? It would be interesting, but why would that be under wraps? Like, you would think that's a way better purchase for them than Beats, in the sense that Spotify is still beloved.
If Apple bought Spotify, it'd probably be announced on you know, Monday, WWDC.
Right.
But I don't see Apple buying. Apple doesn't need to buy Spotify.
Wow.
Spotify needs to be purchased because they can't make any money, because their entire business model is completely bogus.
There's that.
But I don't think that Apple needs to buy Spotify. As a matter of fact, I think that a big part of Spotify's growth has been because it's not Apple. So Apple can't even buy a revenue stream here, because not that Apple doesn't buy revenue streams. As a matter of fact, this entire business of music streaming isn't a profit center for Apple anyway. It's all designed to make its ecosystem better. So the idea of Apple buying Spotify makes no sense to me. None, zero, zilch.
So this may be one of, for all we know, many inaccuracies on this list, but there is enough truthiness to this list that makes it interesting. It has a lot of the acquisitions that Apple made, you know, back in 2008. It bought PA Semi for $278 million. But there's some other large ones that I don't really remember. At least it didn't register with me. But Authentech was a $356 million acquisition, and that helped with the Touch ID technology.
That is Touch ID technology.
Yeah. Anobit is a flash memory company for $390 million. So some pretty big purchases here. It's interesting. None still bigger, at least that we know of, than the $400 million they paid for Next
Beats
computer, which is
Beats.
I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. Yeah, that was so worth it compared to Next. Yeah, clearly. Anyway.
Different times, man.
I can't be loathsome and sarcastic enough for what a miserable purchase and acquisition that was. Anyway.
It's because you don't understand what Apple bought. Yeah, Apple didn't buy Beats. Apple bought the people behind Beats.
A pile of fertilizer.
Apple bought the people behind Beats.
And instead of fertilizing anything, it's just burning an acid.
In order for Apple to get the people behind Beats, they had to pay for the assets too.
Get that crap off my lawn.
Dude, I am so in love with you. It's not even funny.
So we've killed this horse. Come on. Let's move.
Prime Sense, $345 million.
It's an interesting site. It's www.statisticbrain.com. And if you search there for Apple Computer, it'll give the stats.
And we'll
have
a link in the show notes, of course.
Oh, okay. Even better.
Yeah, that's what we do. That's what we do. Yeah, good stuff. But I am sad to say that this action-packed hour is coming to a close.
All right. So WWDC will be no hardware, depressing, and Apple might as well just shutter the doors if that's the case, out of embarrassment and just and good-natured manners to be a company that produces so little in such a long time.
What so if Apple? Oh my God! Oh, you're just such a jerk for opening up this can of worms. What if Apple has another media event for non-iOS related hardware in July or August?
Oh yeah, you know what?
Apple survive at that point?
You know what would be great about that?
What?
They can manage to chop that up and stretch each one out to be another 2-hour snooze fest of meaninglessness that Tim Cook could drive, so that we could all want to gouge our eyeballs out.
What is
collectively,
man, I don't understand.
To watch this versus making a show where you have so much cool stuff that you can make it interesting and cut out all the detail that nobody cares about.
One
anyway.
Of us.
Why would you want to do anything but make
one
it
of
pain?
Us sees more than the other, because I see Tim Cook and I see an incredibly engaging man who is just a great speaker. And you see a clown.
He's engaging only to – no, he's not a clown. I've never said that. That's so unfair. I've always said he's an incredibly talented guy. He's a very bright guy. He's a good CEO, but he's boring as all get out.
The yeah,
only
so one
person
of
that Tim Cook is exciting to is a group of people that can't fall asleep.
One of us is seeing more than the other, and one of us is seeing less than the other. I suspect that I am seeing more than you.
Look, some people find stamp collecting really engaging and interesting. And for all the rest of us normal people, it's boring
excuse
as
me,
all get out.
Excuse me, those would be philatelists, because I am mostly pedantic.
Thanks. All right. Making my point even more so.
I was trying. I was doing my darndest, actually, to make your point for you. I was in your camp there. All right, so listen thank you so much for doing the show with us this week, man. I love talking to you. It's always a good time.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
All right. And with that, check this out. Nope. Oh, that's the right one. Oh, my goodness. I'm such a noob. Jeff normally does this. Anyway, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is provided by Boom. recorded for the Mac Observer. That's all for this week.
Stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
I didn't even start it over. Oh, I'm such a noob.